Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everybody. Today, along with my producer and co-host, Chris Fafalius, we'll be focusing on a song from an artist that sadly is no longer with us. That artist is keyboardist and vocalist Christine McVie from the British-American rock band Fleetwood Mac. And together, Chris and I will break down the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the smash hit single, Don't Stop, taken from their 1977 album, Rumors. This song is relatively basic and odd in terms of Fleetwood Mac. The lyric is rather rudimentary. There are only four chords throughout the whole track. And believe it or not, for a band known for their beautiful vocal harmonies, there aren't any. But dig a little deeper as we have, and you'll find this simplicity has created an absolute unique and standalone track in the Fleetwood Mac catalog. There's nothing else that sounds quite like it. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. This is a fun one.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
Well, hey, everyone. Today we're going to break down a song by an artist that is no longer with us. And Chris, we did this before and the listeners seem to like it. It's a little bittersweet. I really wish that Christine McVie was actually here with us to talk about the song Don't Stop, but unfortunately she's not. So we're doing our best to keep her memory alive and talk about an amazing song.
Yeah, man, I kind of feel like Christine McVie was the unsung hero of Fleetwood Mac. You know, Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham kind of get all the glory. But to be honest, like, it wasn't until recent years that I knew her name. Like, obviously, I knew there was another female in Fleetwood Mac, but she just didn't have the sort of name recognition, at least to me. Do you think that's odd that I wouldn't have necessarily known her name until maybe the past 5 or 6 years?
Absolutely not. I mean, she was in a band with Stevie Nicks.
Right.
Again, I mean, you know, Stevie's star is just so bright. It always has been. But this band, to me, has always been the sum of its parts. You know, there was really four different eras of Fleetwood Mac. There was the Peter Green 1960s Fleetwood Mac, and that, of course, was with Mick Fleetwood, the drummer. And then you had your 70s era where Mick had found this, it was in LA, and as the story goes, he found this songwriting duo called Buckingham Nicks. And they had just released a record. I want to say it was in 72 or 73. They put out a record. It really didn't do anything, but he thought they were fantastic. And he loved Lindsey. He loved his playing and his songwriting. And he asked him to be part of Fleetwood Mac, but it was a package deal. If Stevie wasn't coming, he wasn't coming. And that's how it went down. So, you know, their 70s heyday into the early 80s. They broke up a couple times. Lindsey came in and out. I think Stevie left at one point. Then they got back for their resurgence, which would have been in the 90s. I kind of consider that till now. Of course, I believe that Lindsey's again out of the band. Last I knew, Tom Petty's guitar player, Mike Campbell, was playing for them. But crazy history with this band. But getting back to what you initially said, yeah, Christine McVie just was kind of the keyboard player back in the shadows.
A lot of interpersonal drama. I think that's one of the biggest things people know about Fleetwood Mac is the relationships among the band member. Could you imagine having a relationship like a love relationship with someone that you're in a band with, being married to someone that you're in a band with, and then separating or divorcing and remaining in a band together? This just, it seems so crazy. And we're going to get into that today with this song, which, Chris, has to be one of the most upbeat positive, happy divorce songs I've ever heard in my life. Maybe the most upbeat divorce song I've ever heard.
Well, it's been noted that John McVie, who was Christine's husband at the time, in the band with her, and then of course you had Stevie and Lindsay in a relationship together. I believe Mick had an affair with Stevie at some point, the drummer. There was a lot going on in this band, but supposedly John McVie was unaware of the song's subject matter until its release. He said, "I've been playing it for years, and it wasn't until somebody told me Chris wrote that about you." And he said, "Oh, really?" So throw in what was going on in the 70s with drink and substances, and yeah, maybe he was oblivious to it, because they're also notorious for being a reckless, crazy party band.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe something really good comes out of all that. I mean, obviously, this album, Rumors, is insane. Like, the hits on this album and just the legend behind this album is really crazy, man. And I think that maybe from the ashes of all these broken relationships come these amazing, beautiful songs. And this is one of them, for sure. And I would have never thought in a million years that this song would have come from the end of a relationship, but I'm excited to talk about this one with you, man.
Absolutely. You know, this was released, Don't Stop was released as the third single from Rumors. It peaked at number 3 on the Hot 100 in October of 1977, Chris. Go Your Own Way, one of my favorite Fleetwood Mac songs, was the first single. Dreams was the second single. And Christine McVie, she also wrote Everywhere, which you and I talked about that song. Amazing.
Amazing.
Songbird.
Yeah.
Save Me and Little Lies. All of those songs were big hits for the band. And I forgot to research it, but she did have a solo hit, minor hit, possibly in the early 80s that I remember was a pretty good track. But let's talk for a second, Chris, about the producer, Ken Calais. This guy just completely, to me, hit it out of the park with the production on this record. I know Lindsay's no slouch as a producer, but the sonics of this, when I think of Fleetwood Mac, I think of them as like I'll throw out Led Zeppelin. It's just when you hear it, it's undeniable of who it is.
Yeah.
You can't just kind of say, "Oh, this sounds like another band." It doesn't. They have their own thing, and that's something magical about this band as well.
Oh, the production on this song, you know, diving into this song and really zeroing in on certain aspects of it, it's perfect. It's incredible. Did you, Ken Calais, is that how you pronounce his name?
I believe so, yeah.
Were you familiar with him as a producer otherwise, or was it just in getting ready for this episode that you were aware of him?
No, so, you know, I'm aware of what he had done, but it was mostly through when I read the Fleetwood Mac autobiography, which would have been maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And he has a daughter who had a minor pop career. I don't know if she's still out there.
Oh, Colby Calais?
Colby Calais, that's his daughter, yeah.
That's his daughter?
That's his daughter.
Mm-hmm. I did not know that. That's crazy.
And it starts in my toes, makes me crinkle my nose. Wherever it goes, I always know that you make me smile. Please stay for a while now, just take your time.
Yeah, so that's Ken's daughter. And, you know, the book, if you get a chance, anybody listening to read it, or you, Chris, read the book. He goes in great detail on the making of Rumors. And actually, I don't think it was a biography. It was The Making of Rumors was the book. And it was a fantastic read. They talked about everything that went on with the album. They, you know, the tantrums in the studio, the, you know, the cold shoulder, the arguing, the everything that was going on in this dysfunctional band that made up this album. That out of the gate, Chris, this thing started selling and it just didn't stop. One of the biggest records of all time.
As it should be, I think. And you know what I thought was crazy when what I read about Ken Calais is he didn't really like this song. He didn't like the tempo. He didn't like the sound of the drums. But he said the reason they did it was because Christine loved the song so much. And it's a good thing they did, considering it became a hit. But he said the song improved considerably once Christine suggested to sing Don't Stop as a duet instead of Lindsay just singing it, which I think was a really great choice too. I mean, there's, we're going to get into it when we start breaking apart the song, but there's a lot of interesting vocal stuff in this song going on. A lot of back and forth, a lot of unison stuff. Really interesting.
Yeah, the odd part of this song, and might as well talk about it now, Chris, is there's no harmonies in this song.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Which is insanely crazy for a band like Fleetwood Mac and their lush, amazing harmonies. That is crazy. And the fact that there's really only three chords in this song. It does go to a B7th chord, but the rest of it's just E, D, A major, the whole song. And we've talked about that a little bit on the main show. I know we talked about it in the after party as well, where, you know, sometimes you can take the most basic ideas, but it's what's coming in and out of those chord arrangements that's happening. This guitar part comes in here that's not there before. This organ part or piano part comes there, this vocal part. And it creates the illusion that there's more going on than there really is. And you want to talk about an easy song to play. This is below beginner. I could probably teach one of my kids this on guitar. It's that, the basic chord arrangement. Now, what's going on with Lindsey, what he's doing is Lindsey Buckingham. It's amazing. But just the basic chord arrangement, I couldn't believe when I broke this one apart how simple it is, but how effective and amazing the song is.
Yeah, it's one of those songs that puts you in a mood and keeps you there for the full, you know, the full ride of the song. It doesn't really go anywhere. You know, it doesn't have that big, you know, departure from the feel of the song. But hey, man, sometimes you just can't overthink it. The song's a hit. You know, I'm sure we're both guilty of overthinking it when it comes to songs, especially in our genre of music. It's not uncommon for a song to go to all kind of different crazy places within one song, but this song just puts you in a mood and keeps you there. And I love it. I think it's awesome.
Oh yeah, I do too. And I got to ask you, what was your first memory of Fleetwood Mac? What was your, do you recall? Because
this isn't necessarily Fleetwood Mac. My parents really liked Stevie Nicks' solo career. When I was a kid, they had the Stevie Nicks solo album. So I think that's kind of my first Fleetwood Mac related thing, was Stevie Nicks. Now, when I got older, by the time I was in high school, I really loved Go Your Own Way. By the time I was in high school, I thought that was an amazing song. But it wasn't until I got older that I dove into Fleetwood Mac and really started loving the band, you know, probably by the time I was in my late 20s or something. I think I was a late bloomer on Fleetwood Mac. You know, maybe Stevie Nicks' solo stuff I knew a little more.
As most of the listeners out there know, my mom and dad were musicians, so, you know, music was always going on in the house. And it was the early 80s, Chris. I want to say it was around 81, 82, where there was an HBO special with Fleetwood Mac. And it was a live-in concert. And anytime one of those came on, it didn't matter if it was Neil Diamond, Kiss, whoever it was. And they showed a lot of them back then, MTV. It was kind of a new thing to show a concert and be able to watch it in your living room. And I was mesmerized. Mick Fleetwood looked like a madman. Okay. He did this drum solo where his eyes are bugging out of his head. And he really played up to the camera. But I remember my dad saying, that guy's crazy. And I really thought he was crazy when I was 9 years old. And maybe he was a little bit, as some of us musicians are. But I immersed myself in that concert clip. I loved watching it. I loved watching the harmonies. Pretty much fell in love with the band then. And if you look at just the talent, you know, we've talked about Lindsey and Stevie and Christine, but John McVie on the bass, unreal. And Mick Fleetwood's no slouch, which is amazing. I wonder what producer Ken Calais didn't like with the sound of the drums. Granted, they sound a little 70s, but, you know, was he talking about the performance? Because, you know, Mick's style was a little erratic.
Yeah, he definitely does some things in this song that I want to talk to you about. It's certain fills and stuff that are pretty wild and long and go over where you think they would go.
Yes.
Definitely some interesting stuff on the drums, but maybe it's just that shuffle feel of it. You know, we talked about that. Glass Tiger episode. He talked about how the producer on that song was like, well, it's been a few years since there's been a shuffle hit. Maybe the shuffle isn't for everyone sometimes. I mean, obviously it works perfectly in this song. So I don't know. And one thing I wanted to say, Chris, real quick, is the appeal of this band. There's men and women in this band. If you're a singer, doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, you can sing a Fleetwood Mac song. You know, you have certain songs, you have such dramatically different feels. Think about how different this song is than Landslide. Think about how different this song is than Little Lies. There's something for everybody with this band, I think, is what the appeal is. If you don't like Don't Stop, that doesn't mean you can't still be a huge Fleetwood Mac fan.
Oh, yeah. And you know, as weird as I try to get sometimes, I'll try to say, I want to write something that doesn't sound anything like me or my band. Mm-hmm. And I'll do a keyboard riff. At the end of the day, it always ends up sounding like me.
Yeah.
Even though I play it on the keyboard, I'm still going to the same chords. I have certain instincts. A band like Fleetwood Mac, again, they have their own sound, and what they were able to capture and create, you just said it, how different a song Landslide is to Don't Stop, to Little Lies, to Everywhere. It's amazing.
Well, one more thing that I want to bring up, Chris, is sometimes we have this discussion in our band where, you know, Steve sings a majority of the punchline songs in our band. And we have this discussion and not argument, more discussion about like when we're recording a new album, like, should Steve sing all the songs? Should we have one guy? And then every time we usually say, well, what about the Beatles? That's what we usually say. But you could easily say that about Fleetwood Mac too. Not only do you have, you know, multiple singers with drastically different voices. Now, Lindsay and Christine actually are kind of more alike. Stevie is her own thing for sure. But I think this is a perfect example too, where not only do you have these different voices, but you have different songwriters. You have everyone contributing songs too. And the band is massively successful and everyone has hits. You know,
right.
All the different songwriters have hits. This is like the prime example if someone was making that argument of, oh, we should just have one person be the featured vocalist. Well, what about Fleetwood Mac, man?
Yeah, well, and Christine and Lindsay sound so much alike on this track.
I know.
They really have emulated each other's voices. You know, Christine has like a, you know, a lower like alto voice, but it just complements his just so well. And again, this song, when, you know, when I think of Rumors, you know, yeah, Go Your Own Way is its own thing. Dreams is its own thing. But this is the one track in the album that really sticks out. To your point, you want to talk about a depressing lyric in a sense about a breakup, but yet the song's uplifting.
Yeah.
You know,
I would have never known that this was a breakup song about ending an 8-year marriage. She was married to John McVie for 8 years. And I mean, we're going to get into the lyrics. Obviously, I wouldn't have even guessed it was a breakup song. But then when you know the story behind it, it's like, it's very interesting. And I'm ready to dive into this one with you, Chris. I'm excited. There's so many things I want to talk musically and lyrically to you about concerning this song.
Yeah, we're going to get into it. And I got to say right before we jump in, Chris, that the lyrics here, there's some lyrics in this thing. And I don't know how else to say it without coming off like I'm criticizing it, which I'm not, but they're very rudimentary at points.
They're basic.
It's almost like a 14-year-old kid could have wrote these on his notebook, but again, I didn't write it.
Right.
You know, they did. I always say that about, that's a dumb lyric. It's like, well, the song, you know, the album sold 20 million copies. I don't know how dumb it is.
They didn't overthink it, man. It seems like these were the gut instinct that Christine came up with and didn't second guess it, didn't try to highbrow it, and everyone relates to it.
Yep, they rolled with it. Well, the track's 3 minutes and 11 seconds. There's an 8-bar intro of organ and piano on bar 3. This long snare fill goes, kind of comes up in the mix like it's coming up in volume until bar 5, where the drums and the bass join in on bars 7 and 8. The lead guitar is doing a counter melody. Very sparse what the guitar is doing there, but very integral to the feel of this song. Just brilliant stuff there by Lindsay.
A couple things about this intro that I wanted to bring up. I noticed that Christine was listed as playing piano, tack piano, a Vox Continental keyboard, and lead vocals at certain parts on this song. Now, I heard you bring this up before on a past episode, but I didn't know what a tack piano was. And now, I mean, I would assume that if I don't know what one is, that a lot of our listeners might not know. And Attack piano, it's also known as a harpsa piano, a jangle piano, or a junk piano, is an altered version of an ordinary piano in which objects such as, now it's called a tack piano, objects such as thumbtacks or nails are placed onto the felt-padded hammers of the, you know, of the instrument at the point where the hammers hit the strings, giving the instrument a tinny, more percussive sound. And they're commonly associated with like ragtime music, and they often appear in like Hollywood Western saloon scenes that have upright pianos. And also people often use these as a substitute for a harpsichord. Now, I know that the synth that backs up what, when this song's starting, that has to be the Vox Continental, right?
Yeah, I would think so. You know, it's a, you're talking about the synth organ sound that's happening?
Right.
Yeah. Well, there's that. Yeah, there's the organ sound, and then there's almost the synthy sound blended in with it. But yeah, I think that was the Vox Continental. That tack piano, we'll get to it, but you can really hear it at the end, buried off left. I've always kind of thought of, and you said ragtime, Chris. That's a great term. I've always used a honky-tonk piano for that tack piano.
Yep.
Kind of gives that percussive type feeling.
So, okay, so my question then is, I didn't know, is what the main piano part we're hearing, is that just regular piano or is that tack piano? Because if tack piano is something else in the song, I didn't necessarily pick it out.
No, I think that's regular piano. Now, okay. I don't know if that's an electric piano or if that's a, you know, just a regular analog piano. I'm not sure, but I think the tack piano is just sprinkled there on parts like at the end, but I could be wrong. And for those piano enthusiasts out there that know more than I do, let us know.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure if the tack piano was like the featured main thing or if it sounds a little different.
I don't think so. I could be wrong. I think the tack piano is used for, you know, just some like some overdubs and flourishes throughout the song.
Gotcha. And what I called sort of guitar riffing that's panned off to the right, I believe, that Lindsay's riffing there, it's so cool. And it feels really off the cuff. Like, it doesn't feel like those parts are repeating or anything, what he's doing. It feels very playful.
This song is, especially for the caliber of players in this band, in my opinion, this song is pretty simple. Mm-hmm. I think they cut this live off the floor, at least the basic tracks. I bet Lindsay just ad-libbed this stuff. I don't even know if there was overdubs in it. Nothing really repeats on guitar, which is another brilliant thing in this track. And it feels like it was improvised, like a lot of the old bands and especially jazz bands and stuff did. They would just do stuff on the fly. And that definitely comes across to me.
Right. That's how I felt about it. It's not like I can necessarily sing any of those riffed parts. It doesn't feel like they repeat. It feels ad-libbed. It feels off the cuff, and it just complements the song perfectly.
Well, we're going to get in right into verse one after this intro, Chris, and it's the same instrumentation that carries through from the intro. The guitar is now panned hard right, not up the middle, playing sporadic riffs, which are super cool, and the bass tone here is absolutely shredding. It's just, it's awesome. If you wake up and don't want to smile, if it takes just a little while, open your eyes and look at the day. You'll see things in a different way. And just to show the at least the verse structure and how there really isn't any other chords going on, it's the chord E, if you wake, D, up, and A, don't want to smile. And it just goes like that for the next line, for the next line. And then on the last line, you'll see things in a different way. We get that different chord, that B7th. But the whole song does this over and over, minus an area where they repeat. But lyrically, let's talk about these. It seems like you're just kind of seizing the day. You're waking up and looking at things differently, right?
Well, what I was wondering is when she's writing this, she's saying, if you wake up and don't want to smile, if it takes just a little while, open your eyes and look at the day, you'll see things in a different way. Knowing what we know about this being about her separation from John McVie, is she writing this to him? Like saying, if you wake up, or is she writing this to herself as like a reminder to, you know, open your eyes and embrace the day and seize the moment and everything? That's what I wonder here.
Hmm. That's a great point. And here's another monkey wrench I'm going to throw in here. Lindsay sings this first verse. Right. So why wouldn't she sing it if she's taking ownership? And I'm not asking that question for any other. I'm kind of making a statement about it. Bands are like that. It's like, I sang Vinny's lyrics for years. I still sing them. You can take ownership of a lyric, and it sounds like what happened here with Lindsay, but you know, she wrote the song. If anything, I would have thought she would have started singing it.
Yeah, I think that the intention was for Lindsay to sing the whole thing, and then it became a duet. Now, Chris, I got to say one thing. Did you watch any live videos of them playing this?
I did, and it's all everyone singing.
Yeah, yeah, that's one funny thing. Everybody's singing like the whole thing. That's one funny part.
Yeah.
But also, I did watch one video. This might be a stretch, man, but if Christine wrote this and had Lindsay sing it, I noticed that he was like looking over when he was singing, like looking over at her. Like, I don't know. You look at your bandmates when you play. I don't have to look into it too much. But imagine if her intentions were, Lindsay, I want you to sing this to me as a reminder of how I should feel. Like, I want someone to be saying this to me. That's a real stretch. But I would lean towards she's writing this as a song to herself, as a reminder to herself of how to feel at this time that could be filled with sadness or anger or whatever. And, like you said, Chris, there's lots of emotions. There's lots of, obviously, substances involved at this time. And they'd been together for 8 years. Who knows? It may have been a miserable 8 years where they're both coming out of this like, oh, we're so much better not being a couple. We can play in a band together. But maybe it was a relief on both sides? I don't know.
Well, you know, most couples, at least one of the person works or both. They leave in the morning, they kiss each other goodbye, they come home at night, have some dinner, go to bed, and do it over again. They were on the road the whole time together.
Yeah.
I'm sure they were sharing hotel rooms or, you know, whatever. At some point, enough's enough, and just like, get out of my way. But bands are complicated animals. You know, the record previous to Rumors came out in 75. It was Lindsay and Stevie's first record, the self-titled album Fleetwood Mac. So that was the honeymoon phase. Everyone's kind of getting along. They're partying, they're hanging out. And 2 years of a world tour goes by, they go into the next record. Go Your Own Way is about Stevie and Lindsay. You know, there's other songs on the record. So this whole thing was going on. It's a wonder they got a record out of it to begin with.
And a legendary one, man. But I think the coolest thing is that this first verse, anybody could relate to this. Who doesn't wake up and not want to smile and need to remind yourself to embrace the day and not feel so down? You know, it's relatable to 99.9% of people.
Absolutely. And you want to talk about getting to the chorus quick.
Yeah.
33 seconds. We're at chorus one. You're already there. And
how quick was it?
33 seconds.
Wow.
And what's amazing is it feels even quicker because the chord arrangement is the same since the song started. So the lyric is, don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Don't stop. It'll soon be here. It'll be here better than before. Yesterday's gone. Yesterday's gone. The piano panned off left, Chris, gets noticeably louder here, as does that lead guitar panned off right. Such fun, bouncy interplay happening here between all the instruments. And we get the unison vocals here in the chorus. I'm assuming that's Christine and Lindsay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. And I can't believe how many parts in this song I can't tell whose voice is who. We're talking about a man and a woman. You know, usually that's easy to tell apart, you know, a female vocal and a male vocal. There's so many parts in the song I'm like, who is that? Like when they're trading off lines where I can't really tell. And Chris, this might sound crazy to you. I've heard this song hundreds of times in my life. I never thought about the fact there were two different people singing this. Now, it's pretty obvious when you listen to it. There's a man singing the first verse and a woman singing the second. But their voices are so similar that it wasn't until I was actually studying the song that I even noticed, that my ears noticed.
Yeah, I don't know when I noticed, but yeah, for for years, I thought this was just Lindsey Buckingham singing. You know, right. He starts the song, and then, you know, when you get to verse two, which we're going to talk about here in a second, you know, Christine sings it.
Yeah.
And their tone and their delivery, and she's a British woman. He's an American guy, you know, but you can't even hear that, the dialect or the accents coming out.
Hey, we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Ready for a head-bangingly good time? Dive into the world of heavy metal with the Brutally Delicious podcast. Here, we don't just talk music. We welcome you into our heavy metal family. Join us for candid chats with legends and rising stars. We go beyond the typical interviews, exploring raw emotions and the life-altering impact of heavy metal. So whether you're a die-hard metalhead or just curious, join our family and let the headbanging begin with the Brutally Delicious podcast.
And now, back to the show.
After chorus one, we get a four-bar re-intro. The piano is panned off left, gets super playful, as does the guitar panned off to the right, kind of like the chorus. It's just still really playful interplay going on between those two instruments as we get into verse two. Why not think about times to come and not about the things that you've done? If your life was bad to you, just think what tomorrow will do.
We got Christine here now.
Yes, we got her singing, but I was analyzing these lyrics, and if your life was bad to you, just think what tomorrow will do was, well, I hope tomorrow would be better, yeah. But if the whole life's been bad, maybe it's going to be bad tomorrow. I thought that was kind of a strange lyric when I analyzed it.
Yeah, I think the intention is for it to be a positive thing, like think what tomorrow will do. But when you just read it like that, if your life was bad to you, just think what tomorrow will do. Like, I think it was probably, once again, off the cuff, first things that came to mind, flowed out of her mouth, you know, while she's playing this. But yeah, you could interpret that as tomorrow could be worse. You know, like, if you think your life's bad to you now, just wait till tomorrow.
Well, in verse two here, we get pretty much the same sonics and instrumentation as verse one, but the guitar panned off right is doing something just unique to this verse. Yeah. Again, Lindsey's sitting over there just kind of noodling away, doing his thing. I really think it was that off the cuff, and that's why it comes across like that. He was that good. The band was that good to do stuff like that.
You know, we don't have her here to talk about this, but I really feel like when I listen to this song, that if she was here to talk about it, it would be one of those episodes where she's like, yeah, I wrote this song in 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really feels that way.
Yeah, and you almost wonder, you know, the producer kind of was iffy about it. You wonder what the rest of the band thought about it, because it's kind of just it really is. If you strip everything down, it's a bebop 3-minute pop song.
Yeah.
You know, and this band wasn't really about that. It was definitely a different flavor for them, but open new doors. Chorus two comes in, same basic instrumentation as chorus one, but the piano off left and the guitar off right are again playing slight variations from previous parts. No harmonies, Chris. Sounds unison here. It's the same lyrics as the other chorus. Why mess with it? And that last line, you know, if you were to sum up this song lyrically for me, the simplicity of yesterday's gone, Yesterday's gone.
Let it go.
You know, all we have is tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like that underlying thing of hope, but it's also a very easy digestible lyric for people to sing along to and cheer to.
I mean, it's so true. It's so simple, but at the same time, it's profound. Yesterday's gone. It's gone forever. It's not coming back. You have memories of it, but the only thing that exists is right now. You know, that might be looking pretty deep into it, but that's what I take away from it. And Chris, like you said, it seems like these are so simple and elementary, but at the same time, they're so profound. They're so good. They're so relatable.
Absolutely. And this last line on chorus two, there's a holdout on that B7th chord, yeah. Chris, for two measures. So it's yesterday's gone, yesterday's gone. Hold, 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 hold on that chord until the lead break, which comes in. It's 10 bars. And again, this next part is exactly the amount of bars the previous chorus was. The first eight are normal, like chorus two, but on the last two bars, we hold out on that B7th for two bars again.
Yeah.
It's the same hold, the same exact thing we just heard to go into verse three. Those little things, they make the song.
Yeah.
To me, you know, like the song is so easy, you know, but all they did was just extend and hold on that chord. It provides that little bit of tension. Yep. It doesn't feel like the song's getting stale.
Yeah, that tension is really important. And I wonder if the producer, Ken, if that was like a suggestion from his part or something, or if they knew to do that. That seems like an instinctual musician thing to like, something has to be different here. Something has to build tension. That would be something that I personally might not think to do and wish that I would have that instinct to do that, because
yeah,
when I think about it logically, it's like, why would I just hang out on this chord here for two more measures? But put it into practice and it's magic.
It's a great tool because, again, they could have went to another chord,
yeah,
but that would have right. made you feel different. That would have made you feel a certain way. They could have done a bridge with this departure. They didn't. They stayed within the confines of these really three chords. That B7th only comes in every once in a while. It doesn't happen after chorus one. After chorus one, we don't do the hold. It's just regular. It's before the four-bar reintro, before verse two. So super, super simplistic. I keep using that about this song, but sometimes it's those simplicities, that the simple things, when you just add an extra two bars or just change it up a little bit, that makes the song become what it is.
The next song that I write, I'm literally going to try to do that exact thing. Hey, on the second chorus, I want to hang on whatever the last chord is for two more measures, just to see if it creates. I mean, you have to follow it up with something. Obviously, this is leading into a guitar. I guess you would call it a guitar solo. It kind of feels like riffing again, but it's supposed to be a sort of, in a Fleetwood Mac 70s kind of way, an exciting part, you know, like, oh, Lindsey's going to rip it up on guitar now. Like, it's supposed to be a real lift. Whether it has that effect on you or not is a question of taste, but I think that's the intention, right?
Yeah, and over those chords, E, D to A, you could play a million things.
Yeah.
There's, you know, and bands and people have. I can't imagine anything else there besides what he played now. It's just part of the song,
right?
You know? But those questions I'd love to ask. Was it live off the floor? How many takes did you take to get it?
You know, it feels like it. It really feels, there's real live aspect to the way this sounds.
And I have a question for you, Chris. We're going to get into verse three right out of the lead break. And who sings verse three? Like, it sounds like Christy, but it almost sounds, I wonder if they both kind of ghost each other on this one.
You know, Chris, one thing I wanted to bring up about the last chorus was they're sort of trading off vocals in that chorus. And I know that's Lindsey. And then the stop, I think, is Lindsay. And then Christine does the thinking about tomorrow. Like, they haven't gone full unison yet. They're kind of trading off. And I can't tell who's saying stop in the second chorus. It's strange. Their voices are too similar.
I'm with you. They definitely blend and do unison on certain things. But verse three, I think this could be a combination of both of them. If I had to say just one, it sounds like Christine for most of it. And the lyric changes here, Chris. If you look back to verse one, if you wake up and don't want to smile, now it's saying, all I want is to see you smile. If it takes just a little while, I know you don't believe that it's true. I never meant any harm to you.
Right.
And is she talking to herself? Is she talking to John? Interesting lyric.
I think now it's kind of obvious to me that she's talking to John. I know you don't believe it's true. I never meant any harm to you. I think that really feels to me like that's a lyric directed at John. Even if maybe she was singing to herself at first, or maybe the whole song is directed at John being like, hey, I still think you're great. I still want to play in a band with you. You're still my friend. But things didn't work out between us, but things can still be great for you. You know, I think that maybe that line makes me think that's the intention of the whole song, which, if so, that's such a nice sentiment. I mean, how could you, if you had any resentment towards a former wife or girlfriend or whatever relationship, and they wrote this song to you, how could you not forgive them? I feel like it's just so, it's such a feel-good thing.
Well, and sometimes to take the anger and the hatred out of your heart, you have to wish kindness and goodness on the other person. All I want is to see you smile. Yeah. I just want you to be happy. I can't be with you, but I want you to be happy.
Right. Hey, Chris, one more thing I think is interesting is we're talking about, like, who's singing this third verse. You know, are they trading off? There's certain parts where it's, you know, sometimes if unison is done really well, it sounds like a singular voice too. So it gets really confusing. And I'll tell you what doesn't help. Like you said it earlier, it doesn't help watching live videos of them, because it's literally like they're all, including Stevie, they're all singing like the whole time when they sing this live.
Yeah.
And I think that's awesome. Like, I love that. Chris, I don't know how you feel about that, or if, I don't know if Less Than Jake has really tried that too much. We've been doing it a lot more in Punchline, even on recordings, where everyone's just singing in unison. Like, it's such a fun feeling, and it feels, you know who I think of a lot with that, Chris, is when you had Jeff Rosenstock on the podcast, and a lot of his songs feel that way. It's like a group of people singing, and it just feels good.
A lot of times you'll just pick, you know, specific words and just do a double on that word or on a line. And rappers are famous for that. It just gives a little bit of push on emphasis. I think someone even said that it's an emphasis line that they call that when you put another vocal, a unison vocal on it. Chorus three, Chris, it's a double chorus here at the end. The only double chorus we get in the song, same lyrics, unison vocals on the second line. Don't stop, it'll soon be here. The band stops, which is funny. Don't stop, but the band does stop.
I noticed they stop on the word it. So it's don't stop, it will soon be here. Yeah, they stop on it, and that snare build fill to come back in, it's so cool.
It is.
You know what about this stop, Chris? It reminds me a lot of what, like, punk bands do. It's such like a punk band thing to do, to have a stop to emphasize a line.
It is, and I think that they needed something here.
Yeah.
Again, let's remember, it's the same three chords hitting you over the head, but the band stops there, and a guitar slightly pan left lets out a little wail there. So just these little pieces that are still coming in and out that make that chord progression we've heard for 3 minutes just seem a little bit different. Yeah. tons of new piano and guitar stuff working its way through chorus three. Again, I think some of that tack piano, I'm hearing some of that buried off left. And again, the mix on this and the separation of the instruments. You know, the guitars aren't very loud in this song, okay? This is a very organ piano filled, you know, the bass and drums are super loud, danceable. The guitar is almost used in this song kind of like a disco track in the 70s, kind of just adding nuances and flourishes rather than these big chords and sonic tapestries. So really interesting what's happened there. And I finally wrote in the notes here, no harmonies in this song. How amazing is that for Fleetwood Mac?
How did they not? Whose decision that was for, and especially three amazing singers making the conscious choice not to harmonize. Like, whose decision was that and why? It's fascinating because they could have done killer harmonies in this thing. Like, how did they not?
I picture Stevie laying on the studio couch and the producer swivels his chair around and says, and you know, what about harmonies? You know, and they're like, nah. And she just puts her head back down and goes back to sleep. You know, because, like, how is there not harmonies on this song? After chorus three, we come to an outro. And I wrote here some really great honky tonk, twinkly piano panned off to the left. And you get these oohs that happen. But even these oohs here are all in unison, a higher register here, higher notes that happen on the oohs. And it just says, don't you look back four times. On line three and four, it starts to fade out, and that's how the song ends. But that last line, that last hook, don't you look back. Again, how simple.
Yeah.
But you can't look back. Yesterday's gone.
Yep. You just got to keep looking ahead. And Chris, not to go back a little bit, but I really have to talk to you about, before we get to this outro, that second half of the double chorus where the drums get really playful, the drums get really crazy, and he plays that one really long fill where it keeps going like into the next line, where it feels like, I've heard you say this a lot of times, it feels like it's going to go off the rails, you know, and then it comes in, it lands perfectly. That's so cool. Also, Chris, one more thing. You brought up, obviously this is before disco, but I got to give a little shout out to my boy John McVie on the bass. Not only is the song about him, but in these choruses, he does sort of this like descending walk down thing in the choruses. Mm-hmm. It's so good. So tasteful and so good.
It is. The depth and level of musicianship in this band is absolutely incredible. And, you know, you're talking about those drums with Mick Fleetwood. He was really an unorthodox drummer, okay? I think by looking at him and seeing how he played, I think he loved John Bonham. That was probably one of his influences. But he was like somewhere between Bonham and, you know, Keith Moon. He was one of those drummers that definitely had their own thing. Very unorthodox. If you just had a regular session cat come in and play this track, it wouldn't have had the swing and the feel that Mick brought to it.
Yeah. Chris, what I think is really interesting, this piece as a whole, you said it from the start that it's a very simple, basic song, but imagine how everybody in the band, it's like a playground when you bring a simple idea and everyone could put their mark on it. Every single member of this band put their mark on it. Actually, who put the least mark on it is Stevie Nicks, who doesn't really do much in this song, which is another crazy thing. Even when you watch the live videos, she's just kind of standing in the middle doing backups and playing a little bit of tambourine here and there. That's kind of all she does. The most famous person from the band really doesn't do too much in this song. Everybody else kind of shines in this one.
Well, thanks to everyone for tuning in with us today. Like I said at the top, Chris, I wish we could be talking to Christy McVie right now. And we do these periodically where we go back and feature a song by a guest that's no longer with us. And again, wish they were here. This is the second best we feel we can do. And it's always a pleasure to break down any song. We love breaking down songs. That's what we do here. But if you haven't already, please join our supporting cast. It's like a Patreon, Chris. I keep telling people, yeah. It's just Patreon, but it's called supporting cast. You can find it at chrisdemakes.com for the price of a cup of coffee. You can hear Chris and I give you bonus episodes each week that we call the After Party, where we expound on that week's episode, or we go back in time and talk about songs of the Billboard charts, or just about anything else you can think of. Chris is a wonderful historian. You'd be shocked at how awesome it is. chrisdemakes.com. Go sign up. We'd love to have you be part of it. And give me a follow on Instagram at @LessThanChrisD. And give Chris Fafalius a follow at Chris Fafalius. Yeah. He'd love that. And this has been fantastic. Thanks to Christine McVie for writing this awesome song, Don't Stop. And it was a blast breaking it down. We'll see you next week.
Hey, it's Chris DeMakes, a podcast producer, Chris Fafalius. Will you do me a favor real quick? Go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe to One Hit Thunder. It's the show that I host with my good buddy, Matt Kelly, where we have guests from the world of music and comedy and art. And together, we dive deep into a band or artist that people consider a one-hit wonder and decide if they brought the thunder or were just a blunder. You'll laugh, you'll learn, maybe you'll get mad at us. Who knows? We have an enormous back catalog that includes episodes about Eagle Eye Cherry, Stacey Q, Looking Glass, The Weather Girls, Tag Team, Four Non-Blondes, Martika, Krayshawn, Sixpence None the Richer. I could go on and on, but how about you just subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods and experience the fun for yourself.
Ready for a head-bangingly good time? Dive into the world of heavy metal with the Brutally Delicious podcast. Here, we don't just talk music. We welcome you into our heavy metal family. Join us for candid chats with legends and rising stars. We go beyond the typical interviews, exploring raw emotions and the life-altering impact of heavy metal. So whether you're a diehard metalhead or just curious, join our family and let the headbanging begin with the Brutally Delicious podcast.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series.
About how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with.
The way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments. The ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember. The ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app.
And subscribe now.